avoids that turn is his mother. She just goes a little mad sometimes. We all go a little mad sometimes.
Here we have a quiet little motel, when in fact it has now become known as the scene of the crime.
Hey zombies, and welcome to another episode of the Resurrection of Zombie 7 podcast. This week on the podcast, we're starting a new era on the podcast. We are with Outhammer. I kicked him off the show for reasons known only to me and Morty. This week, we're starting a new series. We're starting the Psycho series, which I'm excited for because I really like most of these movies. There's a couple that are a little questionable. With me today is Morty, as always. Morty's very tall today, and he's kind of hovering over me, and I don't know that I like that, because he's kind of in attack mode. And with me today as my special guest host is co-worker of mine, a lover of all things horror, and the lady who will smack me in the back of the head if she has a tequila shot, Sherry Fountain.
Hey, everybody.
Sherry, say hi to the folks. Sherry's a fan of the show, even though I don't think she's listened to one in the last 3 or 4 months.
No.
But she has listened to the show before, so she's been where you guys are at to show you guys that dreams do come true sometimes when Hammer quits. Let me say this. When you hear Sherry talk, she's from Tennessee, not from Indiana. That accent is a reflection of the state of Tennessee.
Okay, so what's that supposed to mean?
You need to be louder.
I got a bit louder? Okay, sorry.
That's what that means. You need to be louder.
Okay.
When she sounds like a hick, it's Tennessee talk. That's not... Although there are some people in Indiana that talk like that, too. I don't think I have much of an accent, but then when I listen back to the podcast, there are certain words I'm like, man, I really sound like a hick.
Sometimes.
When I said that. I will say that this is the third time I've attempted to record this podcast, and I'm a little pissed off because I believe that Hammer has sabotaged me. I think on his way out, his very last thing he did was he somehow broke my USB cable.
That's possible.
Because on his first show, he broke my TV. So on his last show, he broke my USB cable, and that makes sense because that's what Hammer does. So I have searched long and hard since Friday for a USB cable, an A to A USB cable. This will hook my soundboard up to my computer so I can have a nice sounding podcast. Apparently, A to A USB cable, for those of you who don't know what an A to A USB cable is, I didn't know either until Friday. It's a USB cable that has the same end on both sides. I went to every store that we have in town, and apparently these USB A to A cables are so rare that you can only find them in caves habitated by Bigfoot and fucking unicorns that shit gold and USB A to A cables. So you can't find them at a store because they're so rare. I talked to the guy at the store. He's like, oh, well, no store has these in stock probably. So I think they must be like this super rare find, and then they're $5 on the internet.
Well, I don't know. You might be able to find one on the moon of Mars or something, you know.
Which pisses me off. So I'm pissed off because the stupid USB cord... I can't find a damn USB cord, which is supposed to be like the most common USB cord. So I'm recording this right now on my laptop microphone, which I know when we did the Killer Condom show, I promised you guys that would never happen again. Well, blame Hammer. Because somehow I'm thinking this is his fault. Or you know what? Blame stupid IT tech computer people for not having the most basic cords available to purchase in their stores. And if I didn't have a $500 credit card at Best Buy, I would stop going there. But I do. So if it sounds like we're recording like out of a can or something, that's because I have no USB cord. My sound system isn't working correctly. I have it plugged up right now, even though I don't even really need it. Because it makes me feel better. It makes me feel like I'm actually recording a podcast instead of talking to, you know, some webcam chick on my computer. If it sounds screwed up, that's why. And if Sherry sounds really far away, I've moved her closer to me than I usually have Hammer. One, she smells better. And two, just so she can be closer to the laptop mic Like, we don't even have Skype thing going. I mean, if fucking I knew I was going to do this, I could have fucking just Skyped somebody. It would have been the fucking same thing.
Yeah, it's possible.
Anyway, that's my... And I'm even more pissed off that what the movie we're about to do a podcast on isn't a bad movie.
Because no, if it was really a bad movie.
If it was a bad movie, at least I could get my frustrations out and have it and take it all out on the movie. I can't even do that today. So, once the podcast is over, before I edit, I will beat Morty to take my frustrations out.
That's when I'm going to go home. I don't want to witness Morty abuse.
I noticed, Sherry, that Morty kind of has an eye for you.
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
Oh, well, he's looking at you.
I mean, you're single. Morty's single. What do you think?
I don't know. I'll have to think about it. I'll just seriously have to think about it.
He's nice. He's a nicely dressed man. Look
I know. He's snazzy. I mean, real sharp dresser there.
Okay, well, before we get into the movie proper, let's go over some little house cleaning tips. If you haven't already gone to our website, zombie7.com, you need to do that. Because this, I believe our Podomatic feed will end on July 15th. So you need to go to zombie7.com, hit the little iTunes button. That will take you to our preview page on the internet where you can go to your iTunes and subscribe to the new feed, which is what you want to do. If you want to keep listening to the show past July 15th, you're going to have to. Have you done that yet, Sherry?
No, I have not. You have not informed me of this yet.
Well,
so.
You should be listening to the shows.
Well, I've been busy, okay? You know how it is at work.
So if you haven't done that, do that. It takes about 30 seconds to do, because I just did it earlier this week myself. As always, you can also leave comments on the website. Hammer's been freaking out because there are no comments on the website. And he tried to get you guys to comment on the website. But this is what I like about my listeners. We have very smart listeners. Not only one, because they're listening to our show, which is a very smart thing to do. But two, also when I request them to do something, usually stuff happens. When Hammer tries to get them to do something, nothing happens.
I will say that it's that Hammer personality that repels them away.
That's what I like about our listeners. I like to take this time to announce a new contest we're having. If you want to pick our One Night Stand movie that we're going to do after the Psycho series. If you'd like to, and everyone's eligible for this, even past winners, here's the contest. All you have to do is go to our new iTunes page. Not the old one. The new one only has 3 episodes. By the time you hear this, it'll have 4 episodes posted on it. All you have to do is go there, leave a review of the show, because iTunes loves it when you leave reviews, and they give us, like, points or whatever. And maybe one day, in my wildest, wettest dreams, when I have a unicorn that shits gold and an A to A USB cable, iTunes will feature us on their front page and we'll have a gazillion listeners, and then I won't have any fucking problems getting an A to A cable. So go there, leave us a review, and you'll be eligible to pick the next One Night Stand movie that we watch. We'll take all the names at probably the end of the third Psycho movie. We'll draw a name out, and the winner will get to pick the One Night Stand. And Sherry, you're eligible.
Uh-huh.
You're eligible to win this as well.
Well, you do realize I am computer stupid, so you're going to have to walk me through setting up the new thing.
I had to walk you through describing the first time.
I know. You know how I am. I don't know much about it, so you're going to have to help me out with it.
Also, since this is like the beginning of the Resurrection of Zombie 7 version 2.0, I announced last week on the show that for the wrap-up shows, I'd like to make them more interactive, get the listeners involved in the wrap-up shows. So through the next 4 episodes, Psycho 1 through 4, basically I'll be popping out questions for the listeners to answer and get their opinion on. If you guys want to send us emails, or if you want to make an MP3 file, or even if you know if you're interested in doing something to make the show interactive, I need your guys' help. So I'll read emails on the wrap-up show, or we'll play the MP3s, or, you know, we'll get some people here on Skype. We'll figure some stuff out, but in order for that to happen, I need your guys' feedback, or I need your guys' I need material, basically, because I can't sit here and bounce
answer
stuff.
Questions if there are none.
Yeah, I can't sit here and bounce stuff off of Morty, because, trust me, no one wants to listen to Morty talk for more than 5 minutes on any subject. So that's basically my spiel, and I'm going to probably do that at the beginning of every show from now on. So get used to it. Sherry.
Yes.
Are you ready for some horror news?
Yeah. What's the news? What's the news? Or what's new in the news? What am I missing?
We had two big movie anniversaries this past week. One of them being the show we're about to do. Mm-hmm. On, I believe, June 16th.
Which is my grandson's birthday.
Yeah, it should be noted that I'm actually the young one on the show today.
Yeah.
I've always been the old one. Now I'm the young one on the show today.
I'm the old chick.
I believe it was June 16th, 1960, Psycho was released. So this is its 53rd anniversary, which makes it squarely middle age. Psycho's older than you.
Yes, I know this. I've seen that on the date.
The Exorcist, also a movie that we've done in the past, is celebrating its 40th anniversary, or it did celebrate its 40th anniversary on June 19th.
I think it was probably about 11 or 12 the first time I seen the Psycho movie, so it's like re-seeing the whole thing all over again.
Okay, well, in honor of the Exorcist 40th anniversary, they're releasing a 40th anniversary edition of the Exorcist on Blu-ray on September 8th, and I believe that the special features include just about every special feature that any version of The Exorcist has had over the last 40 years. Plus, there's two new special features. One with William Peter Blatty basically reading some of his book, the novel, The Exorcist, that the movie was based on, and touring areas in Georgetown University where the movie was filmed, and also some cabin in Florida, or sorry, California, where The Exorcist was written. So that does not sound very exciting to me.
No.
I think the second one is William Peter Blatty talking about the actual exorcism that inspired the exorcism in the film. Because I don't know if you know this, Sherry, but in the film The Exorcist, there's an exorcism.
An actual exorcism?
Yep.
Okay. No, I did not know that.
No. It's a movie. It's not real.
No, you know.
But it's based on a real event, supposedly.
So I'm saying, I didn't know that. You never know anymore.
Did you think that there was actually an exorcism that took place?
That's what I thought you just said.
That, like, Linda Blair was actually possessed?
No, I thought you said there was, like, something that was in it that was, like, an actual exorcism.
Yeah, if you watch... Well, I don't have this on good authority, but I think that if you are possessed by a demon and you actually watch The Exorcist...
It's supposed to cleanse you?
Yeah, I think it will cleanse you.
Oh, okay.
For serious. In other horror news, Stephen King's Under the Dome series will debut tomorrow on CBS.
Is it a mini series or like a whole fall season?
No, it's a series, and you know they're hoping to get picked up for a second season.
Oh, okay.
My worry about this is they've already stated they're using Stephen King's book as a jumping off point, meaning they've already admitted that they're going to go far away from his content. And it's been my experience with Stephen King movies that the further away they get from his work, the crappier the movie is. Mm-hmm.
Or then they're going to have like 20 million writers writing each episode and yeah, changing everything around and everybody else's ideas and concepts coming into it.
I'm assuming you haven't read Under the Dome, have you?
No, I haven't.
It's like, I don't know for a fact, it's like a 1,200 page novel or 1,300 page novel. And for the first 1,100 pages or so, it's a really good novel.
Mm-hmm.
And then King has no idea how to end it.
Oh, so it just kind of just throws
So it. The ending is really, really crappy.
Mm-hmm.
My deal with that is, okay, so using King as a starting off point, maybe starting using his storylines and then going a different direction actually might not be a bad idea in this case.
Yeah, it's possible. Well, I haven't read one of his books in quite a while, but I mean, it seems like for a little bit there, he was almost kind of like just like milling the books out, you know? A lot of them just kind of seemed like they were...
I don't speak Tennessee, so I don't know what milling means.
Just running one book after another, after another, after another. You know, it's just like...
Well, that's what
basic, yeah, it's just like it was... I don't know, they were getting kind of boring there for a while.
Finally, in news that I'm not really excited about, but it is horror news. Fox 2000 and MGM announced that they are going forward with a remake of the 1982 classic horror movie Poltergeist.
I seen that advertised the other day. Yeah.
Have you ever seen Poltergeist, the original?
Yes, yeah, where she's on the TV.
Are you going to go see the remake?
I don't know.
When's the last time you went to a movie theater to see a movie?
Oh my God, it's been a while. Probably I'd say, I think the last time I went to see a movie, it was me and James, and it was one of his birthdays, like 13th or 14th birthday, and he's 19
yeah,
now.
Yeah, it's been that long? Wow.
Yeah. It's been quite a while, yeah.
So that's all I have for horror news this week. Still better than what Hammer would have came up with if he was still on the show, probably. But let's get into this movie that I like to call Psycho. You ever heard of the movie Psycho?
No, never. Never in my life, no.
It's a little movie by a little guy that not many people know. His name is Alfred Hitchcock.
Yes.
I mean, basically, Alfred Hitchcock is a genre director, so mm-hmm. He wasn't well known to the public.
No, they won't ever heard of him ever.
When did you first see Psycho?
I'd say probably about 11, between 11 and 13, something in that area.
You see it like on VHS or?
It was on TV.
They played Psycho on TV?
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day?
Yeah.
Was obviously edited for TV.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it didn't show a lot of, you know, just like the shower scene. I mean, I don't remember a whole lot about it, but I do remember seeing it on TV. I think it was like Channel 17 or something, which is in Tennessee, would be like 59 up here, you know.
They didn't have 59 up here back in the day. That was Fox.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It was kind of like like 17, Fox, whatever. It was one of those off, you know, you had your basics, 2, 4, 5, and 8, and, you know, whatever, because public access TV is Channel 8 in Tennessee. Or public broadcast, whatever you can call it.
Well, in 1959, a guy named Robert Blotch? Anyway, whatever that guy's name is.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Blotch.
I don't know.
Wrote the novel Psycho, which is loosely inspired by a guy named Ed Gein. You familiar with Ed Gein?
Yep. I read a book on him once when I was about 15.
Was it Psycho?
No, it was the book. It was a documentary novel of him. It actually had like crime scene photos in there and everything else.
Do you know other famous horror icon other than Norman Bates Ed Gein was inspiration for?
Oh, God. It's wow.
Come on, you're a horror chick.
I know, he's nice. I can't say it. Oh, I can't remember what it is now.
We should mention that we're recording this very early in the day for both of us because we're both nighttime bartender people. We're not on top of our game.
My brain's not functioning correctly.
And we don't have alcohol in us.
No. So that's what's missing.
Leatherface.
That's right.
Ed Gein was also the...
Yeah, because Ed Gein used to cut the genitalia and all that and the faces off the women, and he would dance in the moonlight wearing this.
Hey, this is a PG podcast.
I said it easy.
No, this isn't PG at all. I cuss all the time.
I said it easy. I know I've heard you cuss, so. But I was quite gentle with that. You know, coming from me, that was gentle.
Ed Gein also was the inspiration for, what's the guy's name from... Science of the Lambs. The guy touches...
Oh, Hannibal.
No. The guy tucks his penis in between his legs. Buffalo Bob.
Oh, yeah.
Is it Buffalo Bob?
Bob or Bill or something. Not Bill. That's the other one.
Buffalo... No, Buffalo Bill was a famous...
I know. That's what I'm saying. That's
like,
the other
criminal.
One. So I said it's the other one.
Buffalo... Oh, it was Buffalo Bill.
Was it? Wow. I was actually right.
Been a long time since I've seen that.
Wow.
Interesting enough, Hannibal was named by the American Film Institute as the number one bad guy in all movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know who number two was?
Leatherface?
Norman Bates.
Okay.
Bringing it back to Psycho. So Robert Blotch wrote this novel, Psycho, in 1959, and luckily for him, it was immediately turned into a screenplay. Alfred Hitchcock said, hey, I want to make this movie. So by 1960, we got Psycho, the movie. I can't even get past the stage of getting literary agents to look at my book, let alone get it made into a movie within a year, which would be nice. That's where the big money's at for authors, getting movies made on their books. So at this point, Alfred Hitchcock was pretty established at this point. Psycho was actually one of the last movies that he made.
Yeah, I was going to say, because he got out there with The Birds and...
No, The Birds was after Psycho. The Birds
was
1963.
I thought it was before. Okay.
But he'd already done things like 39 Steps. I don't know if you've ever seen The Lady Vanishes. I like that movie.
Didn't he do Vertigo or something like that?
Vertigo was the... He was on a pretty strong run. Psycho was the middle of a pretty strong run where he did Vertigo, North by Northwest, Psycho, and The Birds. Like all
that was Birds, that's Tom answer. Hanks. That's way off.
I mean, he also did, you know, Rear Window, Dial In for Murder, all this before Psycho. So it's not like Psycho was Hitchcock's coming out party or anything.
Mm-hmm. Then didn't he, like, at the end of his career, didn't he do that little Alfred Hitchcock Presents, the little TV show that came on? It was like a 30-minute. It's like when he would come on, it would show his silhouette, and then he would step into the silhouette thing.
Yeah, he has, like, the most famous silhouette. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say he has the most famous silhouette.
Actually, I remember seeing that on reruns.
And the thing is, like, I only know because, you know, he died before. He died in 1980, so I was 4 years old when he died. So I didn't know who he was. So mostly I know Alfred Hitchcock from parodies of Alfred Hitchcock. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I was probably about nine.
By the way, Alfred Hitchcock Presents debuted in 1955. So I don't know, it wasn't near the end of his career.
Okay, so I had it opposite.
So, the only thing I knew about Alfred Hitchcock was, like, you know, people parodying Alfred Hitchcock.
Well, I know a lot about it because my dad, you know, he grew up in that 50s, 60s, whatever, and, you know, he was really big into horror. I mean, he would watch the, I think it was Vincent Price used to have a little show that come on Sundays or something like that. Anyway, he would always get me up in the middle of the night to watch old movies, you know, like Spencer Tracy and Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, and I mean, you know, different things like that. So, Mom never knew, of course, but.
I was surprised, kind of, because when you see someone do an impression of Alfred Hitchcock, they always have that really phlegmy voice.
Mm-hmm.
So when I actually first actually heard him talking on video, obviously, I was really surprised that he actually talks like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm saying that being like
they had a new movie come out not too long ago based on him where he was like obsessed with the girl and birds.
That's a true story. That's a true story.
He was like obsessed with her and that's why he picked her for the movie and all this stuff.
I mean, basically with the what's her name in the birds?
I mean, he kind of portrays him almost as like a little bit of a perv, you know?
Oh no, he was.
Yeah, you know?
Basically he blackmailed her and told her that, you know, if she didn't go out with him, he was going to, like, ruin her career.
Yeah. Well, so I started watching it, but then I had to go to work, and so I just never have caught it back on or went out and rented it or anything to see the
rest of it. Tippi Hedren is the lady's name.
Yeah.
And basically, from what I understand, she, you know, she turned him down, and basically she never got another, like, major role in Hollywood. So
he pretty much ruined her career.
That's what happens in Hollywood.
Well, back in the day, that's how you made your way to the top, which I'm sure it still goes on.
yeah.
I mean, look at the Kardashians. No, I'm kidding.
I see casting call porn all the time.
Yeah. And you would know this, for you know.
personal traits aside, I think that Hitchcock's reputation is well-deserved. The movies I've seen him do are really... I mean, I haven't seen all of his movies, obviously. I have only seen the ones that everyone loves.
Mm.
So, I don't know, I guess I'm picking and choosing from the most popular stuff. But, like, even in this movie... Well, I mean, let's... Okay, so, did you see the remake of this movie?
Yeah, I've seen... Well, over the years, I've seen several of them, but, like, you know, I don't remember everything.
Well, there's a remake of this movie where Vince Vaughn played... You know Vince Vaughn?
Yeah.
He played Norman
familiar,
Bates.
So I'm pretty sure I've seen it.
1998, and I went and saw it, and it's a shot-for-shot remake. You know what that means?
Yeah, it's exactly the same.
It's exactly the same.
Yeah. I'm not a complete idiot, you know.
Well, no, I'm just asking you, you know, so I can explain to the listeners, too. But it was terrible. Mm-hmm. How can you do a shot-for-shot remake and be that terrible? Well, one, you have Vince Vaughn as Norman Bates, which just doesn't work.
Uh-huh.
And two, you're not Alfred Hitchcock. Uh-huh. Hitchcock can make shit work, whereas even if you are trying to emulate Hitchcock in a way that you're actually doing everything that he did, you still can't do it right.
Well, I mean, you know, Hitchcock knew his shit when it came to making films, I mean.
Plus, he has a really cool name, Hitchcock.
Yeah.
Anyway, for the film, we got, you know, a little bit on the cast. Obviously, Anthony Perkins, who was a queer actor. I mean, he had a lot of other roles other than...
Yeah, I really don't remember him in a whole lot other than being Norman Bates.
That's what I was going to say. He actually had a lot of roles other than Norman Bates, but...
He got tagged with... He was Norman Bates, you know? Kind of like...
Which isn't a bad thing, like... Some people think, oh,
Luke
well...
Luke Skywalker, you know, that guy. No,
that's pretty much all he had, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing, necessarily, because you could say, well, he was typecast because everybody looked at him and saw Norman Bates, but at the same time...
Mm. Well, that's like Linda, you know, Blair. She got typecast, you know.
He's been dead for 20 years, and we're still talking about him.
Yeah.
So, how many actors of his time did a few movies and didn't have any memorable characters, and we don't even know who they are?
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, the main female role... is played by Janet Leigh, plays Marion Crane. Janet Leigh has a famous daughter. Do you know who her daughter is? Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, that makes sense. Yes, that makes sense.
Is the daughter of Janet Leigh
and Tony Curtis.
And Tony Curtis, yeah. Yep. So that would make sense, right?
Yeah.
So Janet Leigh plays Marion Crane, who is our lead female character. And at the beginning of the movie, we find her in bed with...
with nothing but a bra and a slip-on.
But a bra that's kind of like...
it's like one of them 18-hour wonder things that you see on TV commercials.
I see girls walking around in the summertime, even in Indiana, with like tops on that are smaller than this bra.
Yeah.
But this is probably what bras looked like in the 1960s.
That was risque, you know, back then. I mean,
this is kind of bra you were wearing in 1960, right?
I wasn't born in 60.
No, she's having, it's not an affair, really, because no one's married, but she's having a romantic rendezvous.
Well, they kept things secret back then. If they weren't married and they were having sex, then you just didn't publicize it.
How do you know? You weren't born yet.
I know, but I've seen enough about it. I paid attention, okay?
Anyway, this guy, her boyfriend's name is Sam Loomis. Does that name ring a bell for you at all?
Yeah, I can't think today.
Well, it's because it's too early in the morning.
I know.
Sam Loomis is the name of the doctor in Halloween. Like Mike Myers' main antagonist
okay.
In the
way off.
The first two movies. Which is kind of...
I was thinking of a security company.
It's kind of ironic because Halloween was the breakout movie for Jamie Lee Curtis. And her mom was banging a dude named Sam Loomis in a movie... that inspired a character that helped her out, also named Sam Loomis. Which also, I'm going to get mom blow your mind here. The Sam Loomis character from Halloween inspired the last name of Billy Loomis, the killer in the first Scream movie.
Yeah, okay.
So it all comes around.
It all comes
around.
Scream
was our first movie that we did on our podcast, which...
this is not the last, so...
which isn't... available to be listened to right now, but we're still working on that, kids. So at the beginning of this movie, Marion Crane is having a romantic rendezvous with Mr. Sam Loomis. She pretty much pulls the chick card on him and is bitching at him because their relationship isn't real. It's a long distance deal, and she's like, you know, when are we going to make this legit?
Well, he's paying all this alimony.
He's paying alimony. They have no money to get married. Blah, 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 blah. He gives her a bunch of excuses, which I would too if I was him.
Well, you know, he's sitting there talking about going, getting rid of the sister, sending the sister off to a movie so they can turn mama's picture towards a wall. What the hell is that?
You know what's funny about
he's
that?
He's trying to keep it dirty.
You know what's funny about that scene? I was thinking, because whenever you watch this, I haven't watched this in a while. When you think of Psycho, maybe you think of Norman Bates, you think of the motel, you think of, you know, the house, the mom, whatever. You don't really think about Marion Crane a lot. And honestly, Norman Bates doesn't even come into this movie until a half an hour in.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a while to get there.
Yeah, because that's how movies were made back then. They were made well, as opposed to today where he would be the opening shot.
Mm-hmm.
No, the thing that I was thinking about was when he said, when she was like, oh, you should come and let's do this right and you know, and you know, have dinner with my family. And then he was like, yeah, and then we'll send them out, and then we'll do the deed or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, even today, that's what I would say to a chick. That's what any dude would say to a chick. Things haven't changed much since 1960, except for the size of bras.
Well, then he's making the comment about, you know, he's going to send the alimony checks to his ex-wife, and she can lick the stamps. I mean, what is that, really?
Why?
And she's like, I will lick the stamps, you know?
Did she say that?
Yes, she does. And then they kiss. I'm like, okay, so this is like a dig on the ex-wife there or something, you know?
The next plot point or whatever happens when Marion comes into $40,000 in cash.
Mm-hmm.
Because a client comes into, I guess she works at a real estate office. A client comes in, he says, hey man, I got $40,000 in cash. I want to purchase a house for my daughter, which I think is thinking in 1960, $40,000 can buy you a pretty nice house.
Mm-hmm.
$40,000 even today is half the worth of the house that I'm in right now. Mm-hmm. So $40,000 back then could buy you, you know.
Well, it's like when she comes into the money. I think the scene that kind of cracked me up is when he first comes into the office. He's like, it's hotter than fresh milk out there. You know, I'm like, really? No one would know what that is nowadays. You know, it's like a total farm comment or something.
Fresh milk?
Yeah, it's hotter than fresh milk. I mean, like straight out of the boob, you know? And the fact that the girls are in the front office and the air conditioning is in the boss's office.
Yeah,
they don't even let the girls have air conditioning. I'm like, that is just so...
That's how it is in my house. Morty doesn't have air conditioning in his room.
Oh, you mistreat Morty that way?
Well, with his...
No wonder he's so bitter.
Yeah, but with his skin condition, you know.
Yeah, well, that's true.
The guy who runs the real estate office trusts Marion because she's worked for him for 10 years. Gives her $40,000 in cash, says, make sure you just take this to the bank. And Marion's like, oh, well, here's $40,000 in cash. I need money to get married.
And she makes that decision really quick to pocket that money and pack, man. It's like within 30 minutes, she's at the house. I mean, straight into the office. I got to go home. Got a headache.
Yeah.
I mean, she don't think twice about it. She's taking the money and running fast.
I mean, I was going to ask you, would you steal the money?
Probably not, because I'd be the first one to go to prison. So there's no way I'd get by with it.
Yeah, that's true. You get caught on a lot
of stuff. Oh, yeah, I mean, I'm not lucky enough to get by with criminal activity.
There's a whole build-up to Marion's character where she gets pulled over by a cop because she falls asleep in her car. Well, it wasn't on, but she pulled over and went to sleep, and then she decides she needs a new car because, you know, her license plate or whatever can be tracked. So she buys a new car. And
the cop was creepy. I think the cop was creepier than Norman was at the very beginning.
He was kind of a creepy cop. Like he just stood...
Yeah, standing across the street.
The street from the dealership where she was trying to buy a car.
Like he was stalking her.
And then, this is what I understand, and then she buys the car, and the car dealer is all suspicious of her, because why wouldn't he be?
Mm-hmm.
And then the cop pulls in to the car dealership just as she's buying her car, and she pulls out because she's done purchasing the car. And the cop just kind of stands there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so why did you pull into the...
Yeah, it was just like a really creepy, weird kind of
like
scenario with the cop.
I almost thought that he was going to be like, I need to look at some cars.
Mm. Well, it's like whenever she's on the side of the road and he's looking over her shoulder and she's trying to hide the money and stuff. He just looked kind of creepy from the beginning with the sunglasses and just like an anal retentive cop, you know, just... I don't know.
Honestly,
I didn't like him.
Honestly, that whole storyline didn't go anywhere.
No, I mean, I didn't like him. He was just a bad character.
Which is, it was basically all just to grow the audience's trust with Marion.
Mm-hmm.
So that when she dies later, oh, we're going to spoil the movie.
Oh, no.
But it's 53 years old. So if you haven't seen the movie.
If you don't know by now, it's time you should know.
So when she dies later, you actually kind of care about it?
I think it kind of tries to build up on the suspense of her being so nervous and, you know, her just being that high strung because she just stole all that money and she's kind of freaking out a little bit. She maybe a paranoia. Blah.
Well, she's obviously paranoid. She's obviously paranoid.
Yeah.
Which, if you had $40,000 in cash and you were on blame, you'd be paranoid as well.
I think that's just to intensify that part of it, maybe.
So she ends up at Bates Motel. Because somehow, because it's raining,
I love that scene when it's raining through the windshield wipers, and you see the little sun through the window at night. I love that.
Because she gets off the main road and ends up at the Bates Motel, which is, I don't know how it's staying open because it has no business. But we meet Norman Bates for the first time, and what's your first impression of? Act like you don't know anything that happened in the movie. What's your first impression of Norman Bates?
Kind of a dorky kid. He's cute. I mean, he was actually kind of handsome back in the day, you know, Anthony Perkins. Yeah.
Well, he's gay, so...
Yeah, well, I know, but he was... How does that take away from his cuteness?
No, Norman Bates...
Most gay guys are usually cute.
Well, Norman Bates isn't gay. Anthony Perkins is gay.
Well, I'm just saying.
They have their little meeting, okay, where they first meet, and it's just the way that it's filmed and the way that it's blocked. I don't want to say it's suspenseful, but you kind of know if there's something off.
Yeah. Well,
and I think that has a lot to do with not only what Hitchcock did, but also how Perkins portrayed the character. But you get the idea that something's not right here.
Yeah.
Even though they haven't done anything really abnormal other than his love of taxidermy, which is kind of weird.
Well, you kind of see like a little bit of a twisted side to him when he starts defending his mother. At first, he can't stand the woman. He just wishes he could run away. And then the next thing, it's like, you know, we all go a little mad sometimes, don't we? And it's kind of like that connection Marion kind of gets to him that makes her realize that she's done something wrong. You know, she kind of was like, well, yeah, we all done bad things, you know, kind of deal.
Yeah, you think the talk with Norman is what makes her decide to give the money back.
Yeah. I think it, whenever he says that, we all go a little mad sometimes, don't we?
Yeah.
Then it kind of dawns on her, yeah, probably made a mistake kind of deal.
Do you think, let me ask you this, do you think, obviously Norman is attracted to Marion.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Marion is a little bit attracted to Norman?
No.
Not at all?
No, I think she, I mean,
I think there was some sexual tension there.
No, I think she kind of, because he was so young, so much younger than her, I think she might have got a little kick off of him being nervous or, you know, kind of noticed.
I don't think he was that much younger than her.
Yeah. I mean, well, you can tell she's an older woman than him. Yeah, he looks like,
really?
He's, what, 19 in the picture? She probably looks like she's in her mid-20s. I mean, she, yeah.
Well, at the time the movie came out, Anthony Perkins was...
I mean, he just appears younger than her, and that could be part of his character.
Was 28.
He looks 19.
And she was 33. So, not that big of a difference, really.
But still, you can tell she's an older woman, more sophisticated. He's more kind of country podunk naive, you know, been out in the middle of nowhere, had not a lot of experience, no friends.
Let me ask you this, because you've, just from knowing you for the last few years, I know that your former dating history isn't really...
Not good.
I think Norman Bates is the kind of guy that you would date.
Probably, yeah. I would have been right in line for that.
And he would have been probably one of the better ones.
More than, exactly.
Until he killed you. I mean.
He might have been one of the keepers, you know what I'm saying?
Well, you would have died.
Well, yeah, but I could have kept him for a little while before he killed me.
We do find out a little bit after the scene where he meets Marion or whatever that he is kind of a perf.
Well, that kind of shows the twist. It's like, when I seen him looking through the hole, it kind of made me think, this guy's done this before, you know? You can kind of tell, it's like he almost had like a, because he's got a hole drilled in the wall with a picture over it.
Right.
And I think it's more, that shows a little bit, because you see that little dark side of him when he's talking about his mom,
mm-hmm.
and then he's spying on her, and you kind of almost see his face do like a shudder kind of
which makes
deal
me think,
before he goes up to the house. It's like he changes over a little.
Which makes me think, if this was a dude that stopped at the Bates Motel, maybe they don't get cabin one.
No.
Because Norman doesn't want to really check him out in the
bathroom.
Well,
maybe when he's mother.
Yeah. Don't ruin it for the listeners.
My bad.
I think it'd have been funny if, like, he looks in there at Marion and she's, like, on the toilet doing number two.
Yeah, that would have been. But, you know, Hitchcock wasn't so much into comedy. That would be... Like the
I would take you completely out of the movie. For
what
sure.
is it? The scary movie, that kind of thing. That would
the
be
the scary
one of
movie
that.
Franchise.
Yeah, that would be in
that's
one of those.
More. Yeah, yeah. That's more their speed. Actually, they're not that clever. They're not clever enough to do that.
No.
So,
well, I don't know. They had the penis coming through the wall in the guy's ear. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. They're not that clever. So basically, we get the whole Marion decides that she needs to get the money back. For some reason, she takes the $40,000 and puts it in a newspaper, which doesn't make any sense to me. I'm sure that probably somewhere in some film school, there's a whole class devoted to why she put the money in the newspaper, the significance of it, the symbolism of it.
Well, no one thinks to look for stuff in plain sight, and when she wrapped it in a newspaper and set it right there on the dresser in the open, the money was in plain sight.
I'm like, why not put it in your suitcase? If you're taking it back tomorrow anyway. So she gets in the shower and we get the... Probably, do you think this is the most famous death scene in horror movie history?
Well, yeah. And
it's certainly the most... I think it's the most parodied, for sure.
Well, one thing is when she's deciding to get it back, what I don't understand is why she's got to subtract 700 from 40,000 to figure out how much she's got to pay back. Remember when she's sitting there at the desk?
Yeah, well, she spent $700 on the car.
I know, and she's subtracting it, you know, she writes $40,000, and she subtracts $700 from it to see what she's got. I mean, come on.
Well.
Is she doing, like, a blonde airheaded moment
maybe
there?
Maybe she's not very good at math.
Something went wrong with that scene.
But anyway, back to my original question. Is this the most famous death scene in
pretty much
horror movies? Like, I can't even think of any other one. You would think that if you're, okay, famous horror movie death scenes, you would think off the top of your head, the psycho one's going to come to play.
The shower scene, yeah, it's pretty much one of the most famous.
You know, Drew Barrymore in Scream is up there. I don't think that that's the more than the
I
shower
think
scene.
I think one of the, you know, like Friday the 13th, the beheading mama. That's pretty famous when, you know, chick cuts off mom's head.
Yeah, I kind of agree, but at the same time, I don't think that that is more famous than Psycho.
No, I don't think so either, but it's like one of the more famous ones.
This is what I'm saying. I'm saying the shower scene in Psycho is the most famous death scene in all horror.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone wants to challenge that, feel free to send an email. Feel free to send something to discuss this on the wrap-up show. But I, off the top of my head, I can't think of anything more iconic than the death scene, the shower scene in Psycho. And what I really like about this scene is it's incredibly creepy, suspenseful, effective, but simple.
Well, one thing I noticed about it, too, is like, you know, in horror movies today, there's just like blood gushing everywhere. I mean, there's hardly no blood at all. I mean, just a little trickle going down the drain. You know, it's like
and effective. That's chocolate syrup.
Yeah, and I mean, but it makes it effective. You don't have to have, you know, the camera being blinded out by a squirting blood shower in the face, you know.
And that's the difference between Alfred Hitchcock as a director and these hack directors today, that they can't be as effective as Hitchcock was, so they overdo it with the gore just so they'll have something memorable.
Yeah, I mean, they can't visualize, you know, something effective enough to get someone else's opinion.
It's kind of the horror movie equivalent of if you can't dazzle them with brilliance, baffle them with bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What I really like about this death scene also is, and I kind of like I was telling you earlier,
frame by frame.
Frame by frame. Just to see, and you don't actually really even see any nudity. But you think your brain, the way he blocks it, kind of thinks that you saw something, even though you really didn't. You didn't even really see.
It's like I thought I seen a side boob, you know. I was like, hey, get up. Which
on Janet Leigh, they didn't even have to do like any makeup on her to show any wounds or anything. Like, but it still is the number one death scene in horror.
Which, you know, and she does a really good job. I don't know. I mean, if they kind of froze the frame or whatever on it, but when she hits the floor and I kind of got this like thing on it where like it goes from her eye and, you know, and it's kind of drawing back and then it kind of scans over to where she's actually like looking at the money on the table.
Yeah.
Did you notice that? It's like, you know, this is what got me killed kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
Like, that might have been the last thought in her head, you know. Like,
that's a good call. That's a good call. Today in a horror movie, I don't even know that would kill somebody. You get stabbed 100 times and you're still
And she
alive.
Does a good job not blinking in that. You know, I mean, her eye doesn't twitch.
She's
anything.
A professional actress.
She That's did excellent. Because, I mean, my eyes were watering just looking at her not blink. You know what I'm saying?
I have not read Psycho, the book by Robert Bloch.
Mm-mm. Haven't either.
I'll put it on the list with The Exorcist, the books that I have to read, and Amityville Horror.
I think I read Amityville Horror back
when I haven't
read
any of them.
I think I did read it when I was a teenager.
So I don't know how the book goes, but I thought it was incredibly ballsy to kill off your main character halfway through the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Norman Bates actually is the main character of the movie, but like I said, he doesn't show up until a half an hour in.
Well, there's only two people that get killed in it. I mean, it's the investigator and her. I mean,
Kyle, well, there's other stuff hinted at. But,
yeah, hinted at, but they only show him actually killing two people.
I mean, anybody who grows up now is going to know Norman Bates, they know the story before they ever see the movie because it's so much a part of pop culture.
Yeah, well, they got that Bates Motel thing going on, too.
Which just shows that in 2013, the Norman Bates is such an iconic character that there's still
horror icon, yeah.
There's still interest in that character's story.
Well, he was pretty twisted.
Let me ask you this, though. If you were watching this for the first time ever, and like I said, it's hard to put yourself in that situation because anyone who is around today knows the story of Psycho, knows what happens. But watching that death scene, first, if you don't know anything about the movie, do you really think that is Anthony Perkins' mother coming in to kill?
Yeah, because it doesn't show a face. You know, all you see is the gray-haired dress, you know, and then through the shower curtain, and then when it pulls the curtain, it's like totally shadowed out. But, I mean, she has like a really weird look in her eyes whenever he starts stabbing her, you know.
I mean, I guess there's no reason for you not to believe that it's Mother.
Yeah.
You know Mother's name?
No.
Norma.
That's right. I don't want it. Why did I know that? I don't know.
Norman. She'll come into play a lot more later.
Because Norman was named after her. I mean, I haven't seen that on that Bates Motel thing.
She'll come into play a lot later in the franchise. So we switch main characters here because Marion's dead.
Mm-hmm.
We switch to Norman Bates, who basically covers up for his mom.
Mm-hmm.
And, cleans. By the way, this is...
Very efficient on his, aftermath cleanup. I mean, he's just in and out of there.
He
gets it done fast.
Yeah, these are my two observations about that. One, this is the easiest crime scene ever to kill.
Oh, yeah.
To clean up.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's not a lot of blood, apparently. All he does is, mop the fucking bathtub and this tile floor.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to mop the floor.
But he was smart enough to pull the shower curtain down and wrap her in it.
But he wasn't smart enough to put the shower curtain back up.
No. Well, he should have got a new one.
And my other thought was, he's done this before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was too efficient.
Yeah, he was very efficient. So I was thinking, well, he's done this before.
What's Mama been up to?
Which you find out later is actually true, because there's two missing girls that we find out later that he killed. Our mother killed. Someone killed. So the story kind of switches over to from Marion's story to Marion's sister and boyfriend.
Who are looking for her.
Trying to find her and trying to figure out what's going on. And basically...
Kind of goes to the detective. The private detective dude snooping around.
Do you think at this point... Because, yeah, there is a private detective hired by the guy whose $40,000 was stolen. Oh, and the bad thing is the $40,000 goes into the car and...
And what I don't understand about the private detective either... Is he's calling Marion's sister and reporting back to her instead of the guy that actually hired him.
Yeah, that didn't make much sense. Yeah. I thought about that as well. But they actually kind of... This is what a good director does. It's a little throwaway line late in the movie where Lila, who is Marion's sister, when the detective disappears and Loomis, Marion's boyfriend, says, well, why would he even call us? He doesn't answer to us, basically. Mm-hmm. And she goes, well... I think that he sympathized with us, and he would have let us know if anything had happened.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that explains why he would call.
Yeah. Maybe he feels sorry for the sister. Or
Lila. I mean, it's just a little throwaway line, but it works
and
well enough.
It kind of brings it back around a little bit there.
So, I mean, at this point in the film, do you think that we're supposed to sort of sympathize with Norman, and we're rooting for Norman? Not to get caught? Well, you shouldn't know Norman's the murderer.
Mm-mm.
You think Mother's the murderer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're trying to... You almost kind of want to feel sorry for Norman because he had to cover up all the bad stuff his mom did. And his mom's already supposedly abusive to him, as he explained to Marion at the beginning. She's half mad and mistreats him and yells at him all the time. And having their talk. So he throws that sympathy card kind of out.
Well,
there.
That's how Morty treats me.
Oh, really? And he still keeps staring at my boobs. We're going to have a serious talk about this
later. I think he's not used... He's used to Hammer's boobs.
They're pretty close. No, I shouldn't say that. I don't even know Hammer. Sorry, Hammer. But yeah, they do that sympathy card a little bit there, you know? I mean, it's the poor kid having to cover up mom's evil stuff. He's abused, mistreated.
So they do... There is a detective that goes out, pretty much figures out that... Hey, Marion was here at this location. He calls in, tells the sister, tells the boyfriend that she was here. Then he disappears because he's dead set on talking to Mother.
Mm-hmm. Which is because a really bad thing to do.
Because he's convinced that she spoke to Marion, which I don't... If she never comes out of the house, how did she speak to Marion?
Yeah.
I don't think that everybody who gets to stay at the hotel gets a visit with Mother.
I was kind of disappointed in Norman when the detective first approached him anyway, because, I mean, he really stuck his foot in his mouth several times.
Well, Norman's not smooth.
No, he's not smooth at all. I mean, he really just puts it all out there, and then he tries to cover his tracks, and he's not very good at it.
Yeah. He's not smooth. He has a way of the ladies, I think, but he's not smooth. So the detective is in the house, shouldn't be in the house, gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
We get a little down the steps vertigo scene looking.
Oh, and I love that. That's awesome.
Going, you like that?
Yeah, especially because I mean, you can almost picture someone on the sideline kicking steps, going kick, 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 when he's falling down the steps.
So, which leads to Lila and Loomis doing their own investigation.
Mm-hmm.
They go to the hotel. they contact the sheriff of Fairvale, California, mm-hmm. where the base motel's at.
Or just it's on the outskirts of the town is what it is.
And this is when we learn that Norma Bates has been dead for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of throws a wrench in the whole mother's killing people scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, if you're watching this film for the first time, you're probably like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, well, who's got...
What's going on?
Who's Norman got all shacked up over there in the Fairvale house?
Loomis and Lila, they pose as a married couple. Lila investigates.
Sneaks around the back.
She investigates the house. Well, basically, Loomis just pretty much yells at Norman about the $40,000.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're all convinced that...
he's done something to Marion to get
the money.
He
wants the money because, because
his business is failing. And...
So this is pretty much the end of the movie where Lila discovers...
And I still think that Loomis and Lila there think there's a mom still there. I don't think they actually believe the sheriff when they say there, because the investigator told them that they're what that...
Well, they know there's somebody there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think... Because when she comes up behind, you know, Mrs. Bates kind of deal when she's in the house.
Yeah.
And it spins around. I mean, I think they still kind of halfway believe that people are lying to them and...
When they see Mother, and she's been dead for 10 years.
Again,
and been
eyeless
stuffed.
Corpse. Yeah. He didn't even put eyeballs. He put eyeballs in the birds, but not in Mom. I don't know.
Well, I mean...
She just had holes there, you know?
Maybe he didn't get the body out in time to get eyeballs.
But the glass eyes, you don't use the real eyeballs. You don't make them out of the...
You know, I'm surprised that there isn't more Halloween stuff surrounding Norman Bates' mom. You think you could get, like, an animatronic figure or something out of that for $150 or whatever.
Yeah. That would be cool to have it on the porch, you know, and have her back in. And, you know, when you step on the porch, she swings around.
I think it'd be cool to have it in the window.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Bates is taken out. Norman Bates is taken out by Sam as he tries to kill Lila. Well, as Mother tries to kill Lila.
And that scene was kind of weird when he comes up behind him. Oh, Norman just...
It wasn't much of a...
Yeah, that face he makes. I mean, I couldn't help but just laugh. I'm like, what the hell is that?
You know? I was acting back in 1960. It wasn't much of a fight. It wasn't very much of a climax. Basically...
Well, I can't believe Norman knocked him out so quickly anyway.
Norman knocked him out first, but then Sam knocked him out.
Yeah, I mean, just a thunk on the head. I mean, he was down.
But then Sam came back.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't knocked out for very long. And then he takes down Norman. We get the end game, which is basically Norman's been institutionalized. And we get the psychologist basically wrapping up the whole story for us.
Mm-hmm. And I love the explanation in there.
That Norman... Okay, Norman killed his mom and her boyfriend
mm-hmm.
by poisoning them. Probably killed, or did he admit to killing two other girls that had been missing in the area. And once Norman's mother passed, the guilt led him to have a split personality, one of them being his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And his mother... was much more dominant person.
She pretty much sells him out. The mom personality straight puts him, I mean, I'm not going down for this crap.
Yeah, well, the mother is much more aggressive than Norman.
Mm-hmm.
Norman's kind of a twitchy, shy guy.
Are you trying to say the P word there?
No, kind of a twitchy, shy guy.
Yeah.
And Norma is very dominant. She's still dominating her son.
Hey, she's just a straight bitch, if you ask me.
Basically, mother's taken over Norman.
Yeah, the mother personality has dominated him. He's in recess and he's in back.
And then we get the very last scene where they show Norman having a conversation in his head with mother. And Anthony Perkins has this crazy, crazy grin on his mm-hmm. face, which is amazing.
Well, he kind of does that grin almost once, too, and earlier on in it. When he's standing there and the detective finally pulls off and leaves, he kind of leans against the wall and he does that really evil kind of grin thing, you know? It's like a twisted.
The only thing I can really compare it to is when we did... Because I think only Anthony Perkins can probably pull that grin off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when we did... I mean, you weren't here, obviously.
No.
But when we did the Sleepaway Camp series... Anyway, at the end of that movie, Felissa Rose makes... Well, Hammer and I called Dong Face. And I think she's the only one that can pull that off. And I think Anthony Perkins is the only one that can pull this little creepy... I mean, I tried. I tried to do it in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
See if I could do it. And I couldn't.
No.
But I'm not an actor.
No.
So that was the end. That's Psycho. Did you have anything else you wanted to add that I skipped over? Or
No. I kind of like the explanation when the psychiatrist is explaining Norman there. And they went to that risque version because the cop automatically pops up. You know, he's a transvestite.
He's
you know,
he's wearing women's clothing.
Because he's wearing women's clothing. Yeah. And then he goes into this real soft, explaining it to him that no, a transvestite is a man who dresses up as a woman for sexual pleasure. Yeah, he has two personality. I mean, I just thought that was really.
Oh, that's what Morty is.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll get more into this during the wrap-up show, I'm sure. But obviously, Psycho is one of the most influential horror movies of all time. Like I said, the shower scene is probably the most parodied horror scene ever. It's probably the most famous death scene ever.
Mm-hmm. Well, I enjoyed watching it again. I mean, like I said, it's been so long since I've seen it. It was like watching it all over, and I'm really glad I watched it again, you know?
When we did the Black Christmas... I think I mentioned this when we did the Black Christmas podcast. I think Black Christmas was like the first time we actually had the slasher film formula in play. And I mentioned that Psycho kind of is a slasher, but it was more suspense horror. I'm going to stand by that. But I also think that even the early slasher films like Black Christmas, like Halloween, I think they borrowed, for sure, they borrowed from Psycho.
The big kitchen knife.
Well, maybe. And like I said, we'll get more into that, and we'll get into, more into, like, how Psycho has influenced the rest of horror ever since into the wrap-up show. So if anybody that's listening right now has anything, any stories or anything that they wanted to add as far as how Psycho influences other films, you know, feel free to take part in the wrap-up show by with an email or with, you know, whatever.
Well, we want your feedback.
We can work something out. This film actually is one of the few horror films that is selected by the National Film Registry as to be preserved as a film of national importance.
Yeah, I can see that.
So
the aliens come down and watch that, and they know all about us. You know, they got to watch out for the Normans.
The aliens are probably like, man, that's a big ass bra.
Yeah. Not to mention the slip that comes all the way up to her ribs.
you know how we do this, Sherry, because you've listened. I know you've listened to at least two shows. So we give our movies a score out of 1 out of 10. 10 being the best. 1 being the worst. Well, we've given the show 0.5. I've given a show 0.
Yes, I've heard you give a show a 0 before.
Yeah. So I guess you can go to 0. I was really drunk during that podcast.
Oh, okay.
You could go to 0. 0 to 10, you can use halves. So technically, it's a 20-point scale.
Yeah. So you're asking me to give it a number?
I am asking you to give a number.
I would say 9.5. There was a couple of things that kind of was like, throwed me off there.
Actually, I was thinking 9.
Shot in the dark, you know. It's like, what is that for? Why did that put in there? And at the very beginning, you know, it's kind of cheesy with it's Phoenix, Arizona. 11, da-da-da-da.
Yeah, I didn't get that. Like, and it's like, what difference does it make?
Yeah, exactly what time it is. I mean, it kind of, you know, and it was a little long drawn out on the drive, her driving, you know.
It didn't even make any sense because it's like, it doesn't even matter what day it is.
Yeah. I mean, her just doing that fake blinky thing when she's driving and when she first steals the money at night, you know, that kind of was like, okay. It's getting cheesy.
I was also going to go with 9.5.
But other than that, overall, it's a great film. I mean, you know, I'd watch it again.
I think, I'd watch it lots more times.
Yeah.
But I think that if we had done this series second, like we did the Exorcist series second, I probably would have gave it a 10, but now I'm a little more seasoned.
A little more observant. Does that mean you're getting hardcore? So in about a year from now,
I am hardcore.
In a year from now, you're just going to give everything a 1 or a 2? Is that what you're trying to say? That's possible. Okay.
Probably. I like to criticize my films like I like my porn. Hardcore.
Okay, there you go. You heard it, folks.
So that's Psycho, the 1960 classic. If you have not seen it, I would highly, 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 highly recommend that you see it. It's amazing as a horror film, just if you're a horror fan, if you're a student of films in general. It's also amazing in that respect if you're a student of acting.
I mean, it is a classic for a reason.
We didn't really get into it, but I think Anthony Perkins is amazing in this film.
He was a really good. I mean, his facial expressions and everything was really, you know.
I don't think there's really a weak link in the film as far as acting goes. Not everybody's on Anthony Perkins' level, but anyway. So that's Psycho. If you guys have any comments about the movie, if you have any comments about Hammer sabotaging the podcast on purpose. If you have any comments about Morty and his boob obsession, you can go to the Facebook page. You can.
He is seriously obsessed with boobs. I mean, he hasn't. He's not even blinking anymore, Ron.
That's
what
he does.
It's getting sad.
You can go to the Facebook page, leave a comment on the Facebook page, send us a message on the Facebook page. You can tweet us at RezZombie7 on Twitter. You can email us at RezZombie7@gmail.com. You know, I'm on there, Morty's on there, Hammer's on there. If you guys have something to say to Sherry, she's on the Facebook page, I know, but we can relay any messages through the email or whatever. Also, don't forget to go to the website, zombie7.com. You can leave a comment there. Don't forget to subscribe to our new feed through zombie7.com. Unless you're listening on Stitcher or something, like, I know that I'm not real versed on it. Hammer's a little more versed on it than I am. I know that a lot of people listen on Stitcher and they don't even download the podcast. They just stream it. Well, whatever. That works as well. But if you're downloading on iTunes, you definitely need to go to the website and resubscribe to the new iTunes feed. Don't forget the contest to have to pick our One Night Stand movie that we are going to do. And since we did Killer Condoms, pretty much we've proven that we can talk an hour about anything.
That's true.
And those are all the ways you can get a hold of us. Next week I'll be back. I don't know who my guest host will be. We'll see. Maybe it'll be Sherry again.
Never know. Tell your friends, everybody.
If you're from Tennessee, you were well represented on the podcast.
And they could understand me, probably.
If you're from the Northeast and you can't understand why Sherry has to say.
I'm talking gibberish, you know.
Which is weird because, like, I don't think I have much of an accent. I know I have a little bit of one because I'm from Indiana. But one time I was in Boston, mm-hmm. Someone asked me if I was from Alabama.
Really? I don't get that at all.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm like, really? You don't know how people from Alabama talk, obviously.
Yeah, you have never been there, dude. Because, I mean, they're thicker than I am, you know?
One day, again.
I mean, I can bring it back if you need me to.
That's right. Yeah. You're just getting Morty more excited.
Oh, yeah, I know.
He likes Southern girls.
I've seen him twitch.
So, yeah, those are all the ways you can get a hold of us. And if you have anything you want to submit, any questions you want us to research or whatever for the wrap-up show, yeah, get a hold of us and let us know. Next week we'll be back with Psycho 2. So for Sherry, for Morty, this has been the Resurrection of Zombie 7 podcast, and we will see you guys next week.
Bye.
Could it all be a bad dream or a nightmare? Is it my imagination, or have we lost our minds? It's surreal. It's just not believable. A grand absurdity.
That's what happens when you're single and all you do is work every weekend of your life, you know? It's not very social. And it's just not fun going by yourself, you know?
I went by myself last week to see This Is the End for this podcast.
Well.
That's what I do. I'm dedicated.
I see that. Yeah, I can understand. But, I mean, you have an obligation to your fans and...
We call them listeners. You
know, well, whatever.
We don't like the words fans.
Oh, you don't like that word?
No.
Well, I'm going to have to use it all
fans
the time.
fans is very pretentious. Like, people...
Yeah.
People are into what we're doing, but...
Whatever.
You should get that cowboy guy to take you to the movie.
Oh, no. What cowboy guy?
The guy.
He's not a cowboy.
His brother's a cowboy.
Well, he's not. He's more like one of them good old boy kind of guys.
Cowboys!
No, there's a difference.
Morty would take you to the movie.
Yeah, I'm sure he would. He'd be filling me up the whole time. I can't handle it.
Yeah. He's undressing you with his eyes right now.
I know. He's a perv. He can't take his eyes off my boobs.
That's...